right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 140. Who knows? I don't remember exactly which episode number this is. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and we're a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can go to Facebook and check out our group there, The Portal, or on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. There you will find me, your host for this episode, The Brant. And with me in the vehicle home is...
your co-host, Kathy.
And Brian.
Special guest, Larry.
Right, we are on our way home from PAX Unplugged in sunny Philadelphia, because it's always sunny in Philadelphia, and we're driving back from PAX Unplugged 2019, and we're going to bring you all the events, highlights, games, joy, and general atmosphere on this ride home. Hopefully no accidents and no getting lost. We've already had our share of car trouble. We had a lost parking ticket and a dead battery. But Connecticut, here we come. So, how's everybody doing? Let's just talk about our general feeling of PAX Unplugged and sitting in the car and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, good till you started driving. But, no, it's a great time. That was my first time going to PAX Unplugged, so I had a great time. You guys tried to show me the ropes, even though stuff had changed from previous years, so the basic gist was still there, right? And just the mentality going in and trying stuff out. But yeah, I had a blast.
I don't know. I had a great time. I'm still trying to acclimate to coming back to the present. I was just in the future where a robot delivered me my ice cream. It was great. It was actually frozen yogurt. But a lot of changes this year from last year, which... for me, being a con regular at different cons, it was kind of, I felt like a rookie because everything, I'm like, oh, we're going here. And then, no, we weren't. And then all of a sudden we were following a herd. You know, I'm like, we don't follow herds, you know, and it just kind of, you know, the first day was everything was different. And then the second day we kind of acclimated. So that took a little getting used to. Show felt a little bigger than last year, even though it felt consolidated as far as the space they were using. But, a lot more first look games, a lot more opportunity to play those games than last year. I felt like we were able to get more game exposure this time than last year, where last year felt more crowded, so, and less access to those games.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun too. hanging out and playing games and just looking around. That was a good weekend.
Yeah, no, it was good. I definitely agree. I think the show has grown. I mean, they've been announcing numbers around 30,000, and I would have said similar until Saturday, which felt pretty packed. So I wouldn't be surprised to see numbers like 35,000, something like that. It's an interesting show. You can definitely see that the industry wants to wind down with the holidays and everything. You know, people are a little bit more laid back. There's not as much sales. There's not as much push. There's more just show. It's kind of relaxing and not relaxing at the same time. I don't know how to get that piece. But I mean, if you live in this area in the Northeast, it's a no-brainer to me to go to. I know we heard some complaints about badges and play space and boy, I mean, overall, the only real thing I can think of is food at night. Like, that's still the trickiest one. You can't complain about food during the day. The Reading Market is just unbelievable. And, I mean, it's busy, but honestly, I went to get a pork sandwich, and I waited like 5-6 minutes in a line. The Philly cheesesteak I got was like 8 minutes. It wasn't that bad. It's just you're in a crowded space that's kind of tricky. But that stuff was really good. The first look area expanded, like we said. Instead of one copy of games, they had three copies of games. I thought it was relatively easy to get to most games. I mean, if there was a game that you must play, you would probably have to sit around that game and stalk it a little bit. We got an Airbnb. We're even closer this year, so our walk felt a lot more similar to Gen Con. Still further than that, but since there wasn't many people, that was nice. So I probably talked way more than everybody else about my
experience. You know, Brant, you mentioned finding food at night, you made me think of maybe a game we could design. You know, finding food at PAX, and you'd have, you know, resources kind of like Age of Steam, where at the very beginning it's like, you know, take shares out in food, and then, you know, you run out. Because finding food in Philadelphia at 9, 10 o'clock at night is the most miserable experience I've ever had. We go to this pizza place. I'm all excited to get a Philly cheesesteak pizza. And the guy's like, I'm closing in 20 minutes. I got two slices of cheese and a slice of pepperoni left. It's like, it's Saturday at 9 o'clock. Why are you closing and not have food available for us? But, yeah, no, I do enjoy PAX. I think you're right. It's a no-brainer. But I don't understand. I can't wrap my head around food in Philly at night, why they're not taking advantage of 35,000 people looking to eat. So there's my complaint.
And we should be careful. We're really talking about quick food, like pre-prepped food, ready to go, $5, $10, here you go. There's a ton of restaurants, and people love the restaurants in the area. So, I mean, that if that's your thing and you're a foodie, we're more like, give me some quick food, let's keep playing games, and that's harder to do in terms of all that. So, all right, let's just run it through the weekend. We're just going to run Thursday through Sunday, generally in order. Let's do it backwards. No, let's just start with a game you played at the convention. It could be one you liked. It could be one you didn't like. You could just talk about a game that you played. Kathy is going to go first.
All right. I will talk about Channel Tunnel. Is there a year that went with that?
1987,
Channel Tunnel. So it is England and France, and they're digging the underwater tunnel between the two countries. It's a two-player game. We played it at first look. Brant and I did. And it was really simple, more straightforward, I guess. But it was really fun. I enjoyed it.
That's from Lupin Games.
There you go.
So there's that. Is that recording for sure?
It is.
Cool. All right. Kathy's game is 1987 by Lupin Games.
It's not like my favorite. It's just one that I played that I liked.
Yeah, we had fun too with that. It was a good two-player game. I mean, it definitely had different levels. I guess, I don't know. I know we were kind of struggling with the rule book in certain translation things, but it wasn't like a bad rule book. But I feel like there were some things that were left a little open to your, like, if you just read through and you kind of make assumptions based on that, like, that's, I don't know, maybe that was just my take on it. It wasn't terrible, but it was a fun game to just go back and forth, and some good decisions with it too, so.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's tough kind of, you know, putting these two-player games in perspective. There's so, over the last 3 years, two-player only games have become quite popular, and the amount that you have to choose from is great. You know, I don't know where I would put it in that category if I, you know, if there was only two people and I, you know, I don't know that I'd go to that game. On the flip side, I think the same company made 1942, which I played twice, and it was one great experience where we were high-fiving and excited over a cooperative victory, and then a four-player miserable experience where
we high-fived that it was over.
Our ship got blown up and we were terrible. So, but I did have fun with that game as well. Same company, right, Brant?
Yep.
Maybe that's who you could pitch your 2019 PAX U food
game too.
So, yeah, I guess so. The one that jumped out at the con for me, and I think for Larry too, I won't speak for him, but Maracaibo from Capstone Games, designed by Alexander Pfister. It's kind of in that same headspace of like a Great Western Trail or a Mombasa, and it's just, it was a great game to kind of puzzle out and fit. We played it once, and I feel like, you know, it's gonna be a few plays before you really get the sense of what you're actually accomplishing each turn. Obviously, like, you can kind of stumble through stuff, and I feel like a first play is kind of getting you into that, like, into that world almost, trying to get the values of different things. But I had a great time. It was one that it jumps out. I think that was my game of the con, and it was just like a great one. I'm looking forward to getting it at the store as well for people to try out. But I think it's a little bit of a step up from like Great Western Trail, which is kind of the parallel because of the way you're actually progressing around the board. Obviously, like it's definitely like I feel like those two games have completely different. Like you can own both, and I don't think they're competing over that same thing. Like some games might, but I feel like it's a little bit of a step up, at least initially, from the puzzle what you're trying to do. But I don't know. I had a great time with it. So
yeah, I agree with everything Brian said. I'm going to touch on a different game. We had a lot of our Connecticut and Portal friends at PAX this year that we ran into, and Mason kind of grabbed Brian and I while we were on the run and said, sit and play. And I believe that the game was No Return. Is that correct?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was No Return. And
we got the thumbs up. Yeah.
I got the thumbs. Yeah, and it was funny. I'm like, it's a bag with black bricks in it. This doesn't, you know. And we played two.
You shake the bricks.
We played two games, and it was amazing. Like, it was quick. It took 10 minutes each game. And I know Brian will make fun of me that I've been playing a lot of quick games this year, but when I can play a game in
190,
yeah. When I can play a game in under 20 minutes, that makes me think, and it's like fulfilling. And I can play it a few times and feel like I'm changing strategies. Sometimes I'm getting more enjoyment out of that than one, you know, hour and a half game or one miserable game of Age of Steam. But
well, we played that in like 20 minutes, right?
Yeah, I think we played it twice in Age of Steam, yeah. But basically the game is pretty simple. You get eight blocks that range in numbers from 11 to 1, and you have eight in your hand. And you either play a tower of them from top to bottom, highest number to lowest, or you discard up to four and draw four. And at some point, you decide to stop playing and to start spending same colored bricks in your hand to start scoring and taking away the bricks you've already laid out into the tower. And it becomes a mind game of, it's a push your luck. Did I start too late? Did I start too soon? You know, for claiming those points. And I think our first game, Brian had negative 54 points.
I did.
He got stuck
That's
with.
That's not good. You're wanting positive.
You want positive, right? We double-checked that. Was it low score or high score wins? But it was fun. We played it twice in probably 25 minutes, and I thought it was fulfilling. So I don't know when that's available or how that'll be available, but I did enjoy that. No Return.
All right. I'm going to talk about Nova Luna is the game. Actually, all four of us played it. So Nova Luna is an Uwe Rosenberg 2-4 player game with a lot of patchwork similarities. So there's a rondelle going around, there's a little moon figure, which they call the meeple in the directions, and I feel like it's very much not a meeple. But then you get to, a la patchwork, pick one of the next three tiles. You're going to take that tile, lay it in your tableau, and it's got a number on it. The number is how far you advance around the kind of moon track in a circle, and whoever's furthest back on that track, so it's got like that time mechanism, is the next player to go. So you might be able to take multiple turns if you stay in last place or whatever, last time. And what you're trying to do is like complete tasks. So you have little wooden buttons or whatever, and you're trying to just, the tiles have colors, and then they have a task that say like, put two red tiles adjacent to this tile and you'll complete the task, or put a red and a blue adjacent or whatever it is, and they can kind of steer out from there. I don't know what the term is. Just kind of connect back. And it's pretty abstract. It's pretty straightforward. Often I harp on simplicity of games, that it's okay to make games that are strategic and we have to think about a bunch. But in this case, I think with 2-4 players, it was really quite fun. It was a fun little abstract puzzle to be able to just, you know, bang out. Really enjoyable. I thought there was really a lot of think that you had to put into it. Some randomness that could frustrate you, but overall, I think we all enjoyed it. So that was Pegasus Spiel, and it's coming out later from Stronghold Games. I imagine in 2020 will be the release of Nova Luna. Cool. So we came down on Thursday, drove through a lot of traffic. We go Connecticut to Philadelphia, which, if you're not aware with the area, we're going kind of Hartford area into New York City, into New Jersey, and then into Philadelphia is kind of the path we're following there. And people always say, oh, if you can get through New York traffic, boy, did we hit New York traffic this year. So our, you know, 3.5-4 hour drive took us five and a half hours. Lots of New Jersey traffic. So that was a little frustrating. But we got to talk a lot about a lot of stuff in the car and just get excited to get down there. Stayed in an Airbnb. It was a little sketchy. They had a tiny little garbage can.
Sketchy.
And a leaky shower.
Scary stairs.
Scary stairs.
And not enough chairs.
Somebody rang our doorbell and banged on our door at 11 o'clock in the night. But yeah, it was good. So we were close, which was nice. It was simple on that front. Worked out fine. So that's what we do. We got down there on Thursday night and proceeded to play a good number of games, right? Somebody's got to be my gamekeeper here.
Yeah, and our first game never got played because we didn't have matches, if you recall.
That's right.
It was one of the...
did you put us down for a score on that one?
I did not. We did not get that game counted. So our first game, though, was still exit. It just happened to be the Haunted Roller Coaster.
Yep.
And we won that, I believe, in 51 minutes.
Okay.
I think we got 9 stars, right?
9 stars. That was fun. I think that was my first exit game.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we played a ton of exit. It was just kind of something friendly to us. Larry had not played, so we wanted to jump into an exit. This one started very family-ish, like the Sunken Treasure one, and I thought it was going to be overtly simple, but it ended up having enough good, solid puzzles in there. It was not one of my favorite exits. I don't know that it really... shown a bright light on what exit does in terms of puzzles, but it was totally worth playing, and I enjoyed that one. So
yeah, I think it would be a good one to recommend to someone that has not played them.
Yeah,
right. Like adults that have not played those games. I know I've recommended those to, like, just the exit games to people in general, and I think it's kind of a mixed bag with what people are expecting from that box, right? I don't know. They can get pretty complex, and some things work easier than others, but I think this is a great one just to try out, or, you know, if you've got people that haven't tried them before, it seemed like a good one for that.
And from there we went on to Letter Jam, which...
How'd we do there?
Man, I gotta tell you, playing with you guys, that's a brutal game to play. I'm thinking this game is probably easiest played with very simple words. Try to keep them to 4 letters so you can figure out, like, oh, you know, my letter must be T because it can only be this. And these guys are doing 6-letter words, double using blank letter, you know, mystery letter. Yeah, I was wrong every time. It was awful. It's a great game. I'm not very good at that kind of thinking.
I promise next time we play, Larry, I'll give you a ton of 4-letter words. You'll know these words. I really like Letter Jam. I think it's pretty fun. The first couple times we had played at home, I had done pretty well with it, and this time I made a lot of mistakes, so it definitely has some room to grow in terms of learning. We were meeting with Tony from CGE, then Arcane Wonders, a day later, and he was saying this game is just so hard to explain. You have to show to people how to play the game.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. It's,
and I totally agree.
When you were explaining to me, I didn't have a sense of what the game was about. And then within 2 minutes, you're like, oh, okay, I get it. This is easy. And it is easy. But then again, you know.
Not when you're playing with me.
With us. We're the problem.
You're the problem.
But I think that's one of my, like, that's up there for one of my favorite games this year, I think. Like, it's in the discussion. Just maybe more so in that activity side of things, but I think it just works well for different groups too, except for with me.
What do we do next?
You know, it's interesting. What we did next, I remember really liking, but I can't for the life of me remember what the game was about. And that was Silver and Gold, because I just remember singing Silver and Gold.
Rapping, you mean?
Right, rapping. So, but what was the brand? What was that game? I just remember liking it and can't remember what it was about.
Yeah, I really like Silver and Gold. This game from Pandasaurus Games, and it's Phil Walker Harding. Essentially, it's a roll and write, I guess, although it's a flip and write. So you're trying to dig up treasure. So you get a bunch of cards that are treasure maps, and you can write on the cards.
Oh, that's right.
And okay. So you flip over a deck. You play 4 rounds. You flip over a deck. There's 8 cards. The last one you don't flip. So you flip seven cards, and you have various Tetris shapes, and then you mark those Tetris shapes off on your treasure maps. When you fill the treasure map, you set it aside, you get a new treasure map, and it's worth points at the end. Based on the number of squares on the card, you get like 8, 10, 12, 14 points. And then there's a bunch of spots, like when you mark this spot, mark any spot. When you mark this spot, score points for palm trees. You get coins, and coins are worth points, and can give you treasure trophies or something at the end. It's very simple, very friendly, welcoming, like a roll and write is. But I really enjoy it. I don't know what about it it is specifically, but it just, I don't know. It hits that silver and gold vein that I love. Tapping into my veins. Kathy's pointing it in the back.
Yeah, and then, I mean, from there, we first Marvel Legendary game that started and ended 10 hours later, right? So
it's a long game.
We started in the morning, then had to leave, and we weren't doing as, you know, we didn't crush it. We had some bad draws, and we went to PAX, we came back, and should we finish or pack it up? Brant's like, let's just finish it, and we went on to, you know, I mean, that's my game of the year, I think, Marvel Champions, but... after that, Brian and I played Coralia, which was a fun little underwater dice placement, action selection, victory point, set collection game with some pretty cool graphic design and some diver meeples and an octopus meeple. Octiple? Is that, can that be something? An octopus?
No one said that, just Larry.
People puss. See? I start the brainstorming. And I just thought that, I mean, again, it's not a game that I think, you know, I'm going to rush out to get and play 10 times, but if you brought it out, I would definitely play it. It'd take you a half hour. You get some dice rolling and, you know, some thought process there, you know.
R&R game?
Yeah, it was R&R. It was fine. I mean, it was not exceptional. Brian, I think, has a different take on it, but
no, I mean, it's like one of those. It was enjoyable. I don't know if I need to buy it. That's a tough spot for a game to be at.
Especially in this day and age.
Right. That's the main thing where it's just, it was fun and it looks nice, and I think it's a, you know, it's accessible. Like, it feels like. It's that light, you know, almost filler, but like a little bit more than that, like at least for timing. But yeah, it was fine. I'm glad I played it. So for what that is.
Yeah. From there we went on, well, I played a quick game of Brutality, which I enjoyed. 2v2 minis game, very short, sweet, very accessible. Brant got a review copy of that, so we'll be able to see more about that. Then the game Brian wanted to play when we sat down to play Coralia, I got to play Humboldt's Great Voyage. Again, same vein as Coralia, same company. Fun, lightweight, some thought process, but again, don't know that I need to own it. I wouldn't not, you know, if you brought it out and said, hey, we're going to play this, I'd play it. But I don't think it's a game I'd play more than 5-6 times in a year. No reason to really get that out there. So the next game that I think we all played together, and I think Brant already talked about it, was Nova Luna.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we got Masters of Renaissance, the Lorenzo Il Magnifico card game. So Larry wasn't in on this play, but the three of us played. I don't know. I guess that was... It's kind of in that same... Like, it's taking Lorenzo Il Magnifico and kind of boiling it down to just the card engine and getting resources and kind of, you know, cycling through stuff like that. So, what was that? That was, like, the production side of things? Is that kind of what it felt like from the original game?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It was... Again, like, I personally am glad I played this one, but... For me, I don't think I need it. I don't know if you guys had different ideas on, like, how it was. I know you were kind of, Kathy, in the throes of other stuff, but...
Yeah, on Friday morning, we found out we needed to make alternate arrangements for our daughter for the weekend while she was at school. So I was a little bit attention divided during that game, texting different friends to see, make sure she had someone to pick her up from school and a place to go. But I actually enjoyed that game. I feel like I ended and felt like I wanted to play again. I think half of that because I wasn't paying attention for part of it, and I felt like I could do better. But I think it would lose its... It would stop being interesting after a while. Like, I would want to play it a few times and then be like, all
right,
well.
Right. You figured out what you're trying to do, and now it's less clever or whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then kind of backing up before that, we got into PAX Unplugged. A lot of these were talking about playing games in the hall and then the first look area. So as we were saying, the entrance from last year was not the entrance this year. So they sent us way down and around. You guys had to wait in a big long line because you didn't have cool media badges like us. I flashed the media badge everywhere, and that seemed to open some doors. So Kathy and I were able to cut through.
And if you just waited and talked to the next person, and then yeah. It was fine.
So we were able to get in there, and then, so they just had a different system, queuing people in a different spot. You know, they still held to the security. They want to have security, which 70,000 people they don't have at Gen Con, but here, 30,000 people, they're going to have, you know, extensive metal detector security. So definitely moved quicker. They were a little more laissez-faire about it, but you had only two entrances that were bigger that they had to get everybody in. So that was kind of that piece.
It definitely moved much faster than last year.
Yeah. Oh, way faster than last year. Yes. You were waiting 5 minutes instead of 25 minutes. And then we got in the vendor hall. Was a little bigger. I thought it was really, really big. And then all of a sudden I got to the end of it and I was like, oh, okay. It's not as big as I thought it was. But you know, most of the big vendors were there. I was surprised that Asmodee, Fantasy Flight, all that had like a pretty big presence. You know, your big hitters, AEG, were there. Renegade was there. You know, a whole bunch. And somewhat showing off stuff. There was a lot of, like, things we already knew about that maybe they had something for people to play. Purchasing, there wasn't a lot. Probably the Capstone games were the biggest deal that I think were there. And, of course, we met up with our friends, Dice Tower. Kathy and I worked at Dice Tower booth throughout the weekend, and we saw, you know, a ton of people. I was probably most excited to see Nick and Mike Murphy. They're just really good friends at this point, and I got a chance to see them, obviously, L.A. to Philly, so a good place to meet up with them and whatnot. But just wanted to make sure we highlighted kind of that piece of the con. What did you guys feel about the vendor hall, getting in, all that overall?
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of lost for a little bit. I feel like we got through the initial security after the line that was visible, operating on its own without any barriers. You were very pleased about that, Larry.
That was amazing.
We got through the initial security check, and then we were kind of left at the throes of, like, go find the correct doors that are actually going to be open.
Well, they had a sign pointing this way. You go all the way that way till you get to the entrance last year, and they go, oh, no, this is an exit only. You got to go all the way back. And then the next 2 days, they had that door open. So someone either complained or someone realized this made no sense, having the main area where you walk in to the vendor hall be exit only. What they did that first day is they were having us non-media people enter by the, like, tournament section of the hall. So way past the new look and play area, the open play area, and you had to walk through all the open play. So you had this mob of people day one just trouncing through the tournament and open play area to make it to the vendor hall. Just did not make a lot of sense, and they did fix that, you know, the next few days. So you know, it's funny, you know, you go to Gen Con and you kind of always say, like, the last day you're finding stuff you didn't see the previous 3 days, even though you walked everything. And that doesn't happen as much as PAX, but today, looking for a gift for Brant for someone to not be named, you know, I realized I saw some stuff I hadn't seen the previous 2 days, which was surprising because it doesn't feel like the vendor hall is that large, and I felt like I walked in extensively, but I think our minds, our eyes go to what we're looking for, and we might miss stuff. You know, you see, like, Frosthaven, and you go, oh, Frosthaven, and you don't notice that two other things you were interested in might have been in that same aisle. So I was surprised today that I saw a few things that I didn't see the previous couple of days. So that was a welcome surprise today. Cost me a little bit of money, but that's okay.
Wait, what did you find?
Just stuff I hadn't seen previously, you know. I was surprised because last year, I think at day one, I saw everything I needed to see in PAX, and I knew what was there, and I knew what I was going to go back and buy and not buy or whatever. And this year, for whatever reason, I think either I didn't see some stuff or whatever. Brant, you were convinced that the place left, right? Packed up and left because you couldn't find it today.
I didn't find that.
So, but then our next three games, I would buy all three and own all three, though we'll have some disagreement on this. I did buy one of them already, but we had Expedition to Newdale, Aquatica, and Sanctum. Which would you like to discuss first?
Right in order.
Expedition to Newdale. Brant won. Why don't you start?
So Expedition to Newdale picks up where Oh My Goods left off. Oh My Goods is a card game by Alexander Pfister from Lookout Games. And a really, really good card game. Really like it a lot. Like a massive engine build, you know, classic farming style. Expedition to Newdale is like the board game version of that. So it adds like worker placement, essentially, although I like to argue that it's not worker placement when you don't block each other. I don't know that blocking must be a part of worker placement. Anyway, so it adds those elements and a board that you can build out on. It adds more rules. It adds shipping and other things as you go through because it actually has like a 10 mission story mode. From what I've heard, the story modes are almost like when you get like a war game and there's different scenarios. So you think of them more as scenarios than like you must play the campaign. Because campaign starting to have a little bit of a negative connotation to it. It feels overwhelming. But yeah, it's just a game where you got a bunch of cards and you're trying to lay them out to produce various goods. And you push your luck a little bit. You're told how many workers there will be, and then you draw four workers from a bag, and they have various colors, and you're hoping you get the right colors, and then you have some mitigation from there to make it work. And you're just adding goods to your various farms and buildings, and then as you build these buildings out, you're trying to score points. Over 8 turns, I thought it was great. I thought it was super clever. We played at breakneck speed. I think you're supposed to resolve things one at a time, and we just resolved everything simultaneously. So if you're one of those players who cannot handle everybody's doing everything and I don't know what everybody else is doing, like, get out. This game is not going to work for you. But I didn't mind just running my own engine and kind of, I mean, I think we finished the whole thing in an hour. We flew through it. So Kathy would know best. She was sitting waiting for us to finish. And I assume it didn't feel that long?
I don't remember.
Okay. So I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. I think I would almost like it better two-player just because of that not really interacting with other people. Two-player almost works better because it just keeps your time frame down and then you can pay attention to one other person. But I liked it, and I'm hoping it comes in distribution soon. Expeditions to Newdale.
I enjoyed it too because it felt like there was a lot of different things we could do. And it, you know, some games you get to that point where you... 3/4 of the way through the game, you're like, you know, Brian's winning or Brant's winning or whoever, and it's like, let's just finish the game. This game, to me, was a big mystery at the end. Like, I had no idea if I was first, last, you know, it just felt like I was doing something. I was having fun doing what I was doing. I knew what I wanted to do, and I knew I was going to score good points, but I had no sense of, to your point, Brant, what anyone else was doing, and that didn't bother me. I was enjoying doing my thing in my village, you know, so I enjoyed it. I could see your point about two players maybe being a nice way to play that game.
Yeah, and I played it too.
Brian wasn't as big of a fan.
No, it just, I never felt like I got settled into the game. So I didn't find much there. Maybe trying to sit down and, you know, I don't know. I guess I didn't enjoy it. So that's all I have to say on it, I guess.
I have spoken.
What were you going to say, Brent?
I was going to ask Kathy how it looked.
I barely looked at it. I don't know.
Some of those games you look at and Larry's
like... I was during that time.
Were you painting a mini?
I wasn't waiting for you while I was painting a mini, so I don't know.
Tell us about painting a mini.
That was super fun. they had just this whole area set up where they were giving out minis and had all the paints and paintbrushes and everything and tables set up, and you could just go to town, which I've always been interested in and never done before, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I wish there were more, like, nicer minis, less war-themed minis, but I guess the point of the minis is to play war games with. I would have preferred to paint, like, woodland creatures or something fun like that, I still enjoyed it. I liked it, so.
You were there for 2 hours.
I was. I tend to get lost in projects. That's just how I operate anyway. So,
Did they have people walking around there, or...?
There were people standing by the paint, and you could ask them questions, but they gave very overview answers, and then were like, just do what you want. Which was cool. I don't know that I learned anything.
Oh. Welcome to New Jersey, man.
Ooh, we almost...
Hit
a car, but we didn't.
So that's good. Close our eyes and burn hands
out. Just to clarify for people listening, I put my blinker on and merged, and then yes,
we're good.
So, Kath, while you have the mic,
yes.
The next game we all played, you and I think you liked it, was Aquatica. Just start us off on Aquatica.
Oh, I did like that one. See, I don't remember publishers or anything like that. Brent will tell
you. Cosmodrome Games.
There it is. So that was a little bit deck building. There were characters out and you added them to your deck. You would play a character from your deck to either conquer or purchase territory. The territory cards you would add to your board, and they had, different benefits on them, and as you use them, you would slide it up into your board, and it would kind of disappear, and then you would turn it into points later on, and you had different, mantas. And they gave you different bonuses as well.
And
I'm
terrible at explaining games. I just say I like it. But I think what you mentioned, though, was the card sliding up the board, I think, was the interesting thing about that game.
That
so
was very unique.
Yeah, every card either had some blank spots or some special abilities that every time you used it, you could tick it up until it disappeared into the board and only the bottom showed. Then you were allowed to play a different card that would let you bank those cards. They didn't score points until you banked them. So that was kind of neat, and you had limited spots, so you couldn't gain new cards until you got those cards, like, evolved up and then banked. And there were some actions you could take that would just move a card up or move a card up all the way without using any of the special abilities. And, you know, everything else about the game was fine and somewhat regular and ordinary. But I thought that mechanic was somewhat unique and different, and I did like that. Otherwise, it had a very Concordia feel, right, with the playing cards for actions and then getting those cards back to your hand at a certain point later in the game. I did enjoy it. And for me, the theme was great. I like underwater themes. I don't know why. Much better than space.
Yeah, I liked that one a lot.
yeah, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I guess I was coming off of a few that I hadn't enjoyed as much, so that may have bumped it up a little bit, but I really had fun. I guess I really like Concordia as well, though, so it's not like, you know, obviously it's a different game, and it doesn't have the same, like, the board aspect, but it's, yeah, it was a neat one to, and I'm glad we got to try it out, like, way ahead of, like, when I expect we'll get it in retail, so it's just good to know, like, what, what hopefully will be coming up, and we'll keep an eye on it just to see, like, what they're doing, so.
Yeah, I liked Aquatica, too. My one thing, I liked the art. It was better than passable, for sure. I thought they had an opportunity to make it gorgeous, and it wasn't there, in my mind. You know, I think of, like, underwater Abyss, right? Like, that art was really eye-catching. And this art was nice. I definitely liked it. It wasn't ugly by any means, but it would have been nice to see that. But the other part of the production, he had these little mantas, which were plastic you could flip over. The tucking of the cards was great. In terms of all that, man, we flew through that game. Like, I think it was supposed to be an hour, because Kathy, you were considering leaving the hall,
yeah,
like, to go back, and, well, we'll play this game for an hour, and you're like, all right, I could do an hour. It was like, it felt like 25 minutes or something.
It was
like,
bad.
We flew through that game, which was both good and bad for me. Like, it was nice that we weren't there for 2 hours instead. In fact, that was almost a general theme. Most games we played were shorter than any box time said. But we play like that at cons. We just go. You know, we don't try to get every intricacy and work through every piece of it. So, that was Aquatica. I am just going to point out for our listeners at home and for those in the car, we are driving through New Jersey. It is dusk. And right to our east here is the New York City skyline, and it is awesome. All lit up. You can see the Freedom Tower on the south end. Well, you can't see Statue of Liberty, but down there, make your way up. You've got the Empire State Building, and then you've got your center buildings, the Chrysler buildings over there. It is really quite an awesome view. If you have not been to New York City or driven by the city, it's a really cool thing to see. And just something I like to not take for granted that I live in this area and get the opportunity to see that. So it's pretty cool. But speaking of that, I'm going to need some help with directions and the GW Bridge, which is not quite the sight to see. So we're going to pause while I get a nav to navigation through here, and we'll pick up on the back end of that. So we'll see you in a bit. That was a little longer than short break. We hit some extensive New York George Washington Bridge traffic. So here we are, an hour and a half later. We're in Connecticut. Hey, welcome home. Well, welcome home. So we're in the southwest part of the state, making our way home the last hour and a half or so here. So we had just finished talking about Aquatica, and the third game in the set for that day, Larry, I believe, was Sanctum.
Yes.
So, in kind of like the evening, we wandered our way downstairs to the other side and found a whole hallway of rooms. And one of those rooms was the CGE room, Czech Games Edition. And we got in there, and there was a ton of people in that room. They were demoing everything. We walk in the room, and what would you say, within 30 seconds, I saw Tony Gelati, and he was like, oh, hey, Brand. And so Tony previously worked for Arcane Wonders and now got a job over at CGE, and he's like, do you have time? I want to show you things. And I said, yes, everyone come. And took us back to his desk, his little spot, his presentation area, and walked us through a bunch of new CGE things. Now, we've seen a lot, played a lot. Letter Jam was one of the big ones they're pushing, but the other one was Sanctum. I was really stoked for this. In fact, the reason we went down to this room was to find this game. Sanctum is a Diablo-esque Euro game, I think is the best way to describe that, yes?
I would say so.
Okay. So, this is the same designer, Philip Nedek, who designed Adrenaline for CGE, which was a Euro first-person shooter. So this had that same kind of idea. So anyway, we got the whole spiel. We're going to get a review copy, so we should be all set on that. But Larry, you liked it so much you picked up a copy.
I did.
So we were able to play that evening, kind of a first, you know, first impressions kind of thing. Obviously, all these are, but there's that piece. I really quite enjoyed it. I don't know, Brian, what you and Larry thought. Kathy, we played some stuff, but then you went to bed? You just needed away time? You were done with board games after 32 in one day?
Yeah, I went to bed.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You look at the game and you think it's going to be a dungeon crawl, and it's really not. It's really like a character build on your board, and then somewhat of, you know, dice rolling, dice manipulation, dice placement. Even though you're using the dice to kill creatures, those creatures have dice spots, so it almost gives you that dice placement feel. The only thing I would say, and next time we see Tony, I'm even going to ask him, it seemed odd to me to not score points, but declare a winner at the end based on who's still alive with the most health. Like, you know, we're adventurers, went after this demon, and all three of us survived and defeated him. To me, it almost felt cooperative because there was nothing about it that felt competitive. So to have that kind of be the end game, I'd almost play with friends and say, hey, if you die, you're out. If you live and we beat the demon, you win. Like, share the win, whatever. But other than that, I thought it was phenomenal. I thought the game presentation looked great. The building your character and getting items was fun. Even some of the mechanics of how you fought the final boss was interesting, that it stayed out round over round, and number of cards that, you know, damaged you was quite interesting. I don't know. That was my thought on it. I enjoyed it. I bought it.
Yeah, I had a fun time with it. It was definitely, you know, it was a neat puzzle to try to figure out, and just trying to level up that was the enjoyment. So I enjoyed it. Yeah, like Larry was saying, like, the ending was a little bit weird, but even still, it was just fun to play through and just, you know, try stuff out and see how it all worked. So
yeah, the main idea is there's kind of like some drafting. You move forward and you draft demons that you're going to fight, and then you can kill them, and then you level up to get various of every enemy you kill gives you equipment, and then you can get skills as you level up, and you get these cards, and it's really quite delicious. The leveling up, I thought, was really good. The whole thing, you're cycling through boards, you're kind of scrolling forward like you would in a video game. And then even the ending was good. Like, you fight this final boss, and some people can move on to the end, and other people can get extra turns, but then they suffer more penalties. And then you've got to make your way. Each person puts on a series of, like, pretty highly punishing cards, difficult cards, that you have to get through. Now, we were told, like, it's really hard, you don't survive at the end, and we all did. And I think it makes perfect sense for health to be the final, like, tiebreaker or victory point, but it's just like, okay, if I'm going to win, then I want to also have the most health, so I have to prioritize other things, was the part that I thought was a little weird. But again, it was one play, it was a first impression. There's four characters. They roughly play different. I wouldn't actually call them asymmetric in, like, full structure. They just have different talents. Yes?
Correct.
Like, yeah. They play the same way. They just have different abilities and things. It's less asymmetric. You're not really playing totally different. But anyway, it was a really cool game. That's Sanctum from CGE. Where do we go from there? Do we go to bed?
No. We played a game I enjoyed. I think you really didn't like it. Oddly enough, named It's a Wonderful World.
Oh, I didn't like that game. Yeah. So it's a card drafting game. Obviously, Seven Wonders kind of rules that world. And you're trying to build a civilization, and you have a bunch of resources that you generate. And then you score points for all your cards at the end. I mean, there were really no other mechanisms. However, I will caveat that we realized we played it wrong, because you're supposed to produce each resource one at a time. And then you can use those resources to possibly build other buildings to trigger more things. So I do need to play it again. But I got smoked. Larry, what did you have, like 75 points, and I had 25 or even worse than that?
78 to, it's dark in here, 25, yes.
Yeah. Well, Brian was in there.
Brian had 47, though. He did much better than you.
Well, yeah. So you had like twice Brian's and three times mine, and that just wasn't satisfying. I just felt like I just got no cards that worked off the engine. But I play it again. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced that it's something that we need, as opposed to like a Mule, which is a Seven Wonders card drafting game that plays a bunch of people. That's phenomenal. Unexpectedly so. Probably one of my hidden gems. Definitely one of my hidden gems of this year. So, yeah, that's that. So then after that, I went to bed.
Yeah, Brian and I got to play the 1987 Channel Tunnel, which
we
already talked about. We had fun with that.
So now we're at Saturday morning. So, Larry, you and I got up and had a... we forgot Friday morning. We got up early and watched The Mandalorian.
Yes, we did.
We had a good time with that. This is the way.
This is the way.
Now that we have Disney Plus. So we were able to enjoy that. And then Saturday morning we got up and we played a bunch of...
Button Shy.
Yeah, Button Shy wallet games. You have a whole bunch. And then what did you pick up, like 10 more?
Yeah, I feel like it was 10 more. It was in that range, maybe 8 or 9. Some solo, some 2-player only, some 2-4. And you and I got to play Tussie Mussie and Wonder Tales in the morning. And Tussie Mussie was, that's claim to fame was, I'm going to forget her name.
Elizabeth Hargrave.
Yes, who designed Wingspan. We actually played it again later on, all four of us. And that was a little interesting, right? You offer flowers to your opponent, one face up, one face down, and it becomes a game of do you take the face up one or do you see what's face down? And once you get four cards in front of you, they all have different scoring mechanisms, both for the face down and face up cards. Play three rounds, highest score wins. I don't know what you all thought, but I for what it is, in a an $8 small wallet size game, I thought it was a lot of fun.
I liked that one a lot.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I could definitely see bringing that to a restaurant to play it. Like, it's quick. It's... Yeah. I mean, there's better I Split You Choose, but it's kind of a little bit more of a mind game than an I Split You Choose. You're just trying to play the other person, and it was funny to be like, this is the card you want, but how do I know if you're telling me the right thing? I don't know. It was neat. The Wonder Tales one... It's just too much... It's too straightforward on the point scoring to make like the ones that combo really well work good. Work well.
Competitive.
Yeah, and it's there's like these two, there's the classic like flip another card so now it's yours, and the swap two positions of cards. Those cards are just so crucial to the game.
What's interesting about it is every card had a double-sided, same exact card, red and blue. So I'm the blue player, Brant's the red player, I get two cards, he gets two cards, and they all have the different... And then each round, there's a different grid layout that you have to play the cards in. So there is some strategy into, as you play your first few cards, which direction you're going to go in, because once you fill a certain... if you're four wide, you can't go any wider or four high, but then in the next round, it was different. In the last round, it was like a pyramid, one on top with... 7 on the bottom, Brant, or something like that.
Yeah, 7-5-3-1.
So again, it was real interesting as to where you were going to put stuff. Like, if you had Little Red Riding Hood, you didn't want her near the Big Bad Wolf, or the Big Bad Wolf wanted to be near the Three Little Pigs, and the the bear, the Papa Bear, Mama Bear, Baby Bear all wanted to be together to score more points. It was interesting, but it seemed like decisions were obvious. For the most part.
And forced at times. So, like, in that last round, I had two of the Three Little Pigs who were -5 next to the Big Bad Wolf, which you were holding, and then I had some other character who was minus next to a character you were holding. So my three options were all, whenever I placed this out, we knew exactly what you were going to do to your benefit. So I was just forced to just place a character where they could score 0 points rather than lose me points. So I had no decision in those. It just ran into that issue. Now that's just a random shuffle what happens, but I could see that playing out in one of the three rounds every game, where you're just going to be stuck, where the decisions aren't interesting. They're just, yeah, the grid is just locked. So, but it was cool art. It reminded me of Raggedy Ann and Andy.
Yeah, no, the cards were nice.
In terms of all that. So those button shy games are neat, and Vino Morte is still head and shoulders above the rest. Although Circle Wagons and Sprawlopolis are quite good.
And then, Brent, you sat down and were willing to play a game that you had already played to, so that I could get a demo of it, and I really liked it, Last Bastion.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people out there love Ghost Stories. I wasn't a huge Ghost Stories fan with the art and with the old feel of the game and just some of the... I just didn't buy into it, and this game, I guess, is a reskin, and honestly, other than the mechanisms being the same with the cards and the dice... I didn't know it was Ghost Stories. If you didn't tell me it was Ghost Stories, I would have been like, oh, this plays similar to that Ghost Stories game I played a couple of years ago, because I thought it looked phenomenal. And it was a lot of fun, and there were some cool little rules tweaks that I thought made the game a lot more enjoyable with the special abilities and stuff. You know more about that than I do. But.
Yeah, so I don't know the exact differences. I know there's eight characters instead of four, although... It's a little bit of a lie when I think about it, because the original game had four characters with two sides each, two special abilities. This is eight characters with one special ability, so in my mind that's the same thing. Although I guess you can mix and match, so that would make it somewhat different. The look is amazing. You know, sculpts that are Seamon-like, just cool little added features. The art was really cool, because even though it was still tough and it was still kind of like gritty or war, it wasn't so bloody or gruesome. So it was much more like there's a battle, but noble, more like a Lord of the Rings kind of thing.
Yeah, fantasy theme,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, fantasy theme, which was neat. I do like the Ghost Story theme, even though I'm not a horror fan. That is just a great game. They say it's easier. I could see some things that were obviously easier. I could see some things that I have no idea if they were better or worse. But, yeah, just sitting there playing the game, I was like, yeah, I kept thinking about that game and wanting to play that game. So you had asked me, I think, pre-recording the podcast, what was my game of the con. And I think back, this is when I already know I like Ghost Stories, so it's a little weird on that front. But I'm pretty excited to dig this one out and play it. Yeah, and if people can get access to Ghost Stories through this game, it's really good. It's a really, really good co-op game, so that should be exciting.
From there, we played 1942 USS Yorktown, which we won despite poor rolling. and then Maracaibo, which Brian loved. I'll let him describe that one a bit.
Well, I mean, we already did, right?
Maracaibo?
Maracaibo.
Oh, Maracaibo.
Well, I don't know. Did we say how it played, though? Or
I mean,
we did.
Kind of.
I know. It was heavy Euro 5 hours play ago, game from Alexander Pfister. Yeah. Brain burner. 2.5 to 3 hours on your first play. Probably gets down close to two. And a lot of people are saying it's their game of the year. And you guys thought it was your game of the con.
And you guys waited for us to finish. So
that's right.
That was very nice of you.
Oh, while they were finishing, we played Pictures.
I liked that game a lot.
I bet you can describe Pictures.
I can describe Pictures. So it's kind of a party game, I think. There's a grid of pictures laid out on the table. And then everybody who's playing has a different set of tools, I will call them, in front of them. So my first tools I had to work with were just little colored cubes, of which I could pick 9 to work with. And there were other ones. Somebody had a deck of cards that had like line drawing pictures on them. There was
sticks and stones.
There were little wooden blocks, different shapes. Oh, and there were shoelaces, that's right. So what you do is you pass around a bag of tiles, and they direct you to one of the pictures that are laid out in the grid that everybody can see. And then simultaneously, you all have to use the tools in front of you to represent the picture that your tile indicates. And everybody has to guess what picture you are representing with your tools at the end. It's very abstract because they're all different. And then once you you score by if you guess somebody else's representation correctly, you can get a point. And then if people guess your representation, you get points for that as well. And then once that round is over, you put your tile back in the bag, you pass your set of tools around, so then you're starting, so the next set that I got was the sticks and stones, and you have to use all of them and try to arrange them so people can figure out what picture you're talking about. I liked it.
Yeah, it's extremely satisfying when you figure out how to use your objects to represent the picture and then people get it. You're like, yes. It's much more an activity. It does have scoring. I almost would argue it's a co-op. Like, you're almost more excited to try to just... Like, you could almost just take everybody's points and add them up and that's your score more than who got the highest score.
Yeah.
Because you're not really clever when you figure out what the person's item is because they're trying to... Right, it's not one of those games where it's like, well, I want some people to guess, but not everybody. You want everybody to guess. So it's really that they did a good job in terms of that. So I guess that's where you could score your most points or whatever. But it's a very light atmosphere. It's not really competitive on any front, which I think I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And it's just cool. Like, it was a great idea to have five different tools. So basically, you could play five rounds and play with the different tool sets and then be like totally satisfied that you had a blast doing that. And the cards stay out there, so there's a little bit of a metagame. Like, you don't switch the cards out every time, so you start to be like, oh, that represents a fox. We all know that's a fox. And the interesting part is two people can draw the same card on the token. So that happened in the first round with us, and we weren't aware. Your card and another guy we were playing with had the same card, but you were representing with the little cubes, and he was representing with the shoelaces.
Yeah.
And it was pretty clear that you were both doing the same thing, but I was like, oh gosh, what is somebody doing? And then they clarified, oh, there's multiple of the same token in the bag. I was like, ah, that changes it up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, really fun, I guess, party game, light game, just cool little whimsical feel to it that we had a good time with. I don't remember. My brain is starting to get tired here.
Yeah, from there, so. While you were getting ready, Brian and I played a quick pocket game, Seasons of Rice. It's a fun little button-shy game where you draft, I guess, a special character or an Asian spirit.
Yeah, I mean, you start off with, like, a... someone like a farmer almost, right? Like one card that gives you special abilities. You know, again, it's that like 18 card deck. Every card is double sided. One side has like the farmer or something like that, which gives you a special ability or scoring or something like that. The backs of all the cards are showing all the rice paddies, so it's like gridded out. Like it's kind of picture like a Carcassonne board, but cut up into cards with like different things on it, like farmers and you know, like the fields, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's just a drafting game. You're going back and forth trying to complete your rice paddies. And just, you know, you're just trying to score points based on doing whatever your objective is telling you to do, your farmer. Plus, whenever you seal off a paddy, then you get points based on what it's containing. So it's pretty neat. I mean, it played pretty quickly. I mean, we tied. I don't know. I guess we need to try it again. That's the main thing, just to see how how it differentiates with a different power, and you know, just kind of knowing what to do, like what the length of the game actually looks like. So, I had fun with it though.
Yeah, and it's neat. I mean, every card's backside is a different scoring condition. So, if you play the game six times, you're probably going to play six different versions. You know, based on having six different. Farmers or
yeah,
whatever,
you get one farmer, one character all the rest of the cards that you draft are just the fields.
Correct. So,
did you say it's two-player only?
Yes. I think. Pretty sure it was two-player only. Seemed like
yeah,
it was.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if we said it, but yeah, it seemed like that.
Cool. So I believe from there we kind of wrapped it up. We did this last year, too, where, you know, we got to Saturday night, the hall closed or was close to closing, and we decided, hey, let's just kind of call it, go back to our place. We can all put on comfortable clothes, and we can grab some food and just kind of hang out. We had a table and some chairs and whatnot. We just play what we've got at that point, right? We don't really need first look. We don't need that. We have four of us, so what are we going to do? Find four other people and play eight-player? You know what I mean?
Ryan, we were so excited to play probably the best game we had with us, Age of Steam.
Oh, yes.
And that was the game that we played next.
Yes.
Kathy and I loved it.
So, I did an excellent teach of Age.
Yeah, cheat, sure.
An excellent teach of the new Age of Steam, which doesn't really have any rules changes, but the update here from Eagle Griffin, we brought the full big copy, and I did a really good teach, and I got one rule wrong, which is the replacement of goods, which, if you haven't played Age of Steam, it's a train game with an economy that is ultra tight, and it's a fierce battle of income, and you need to move goods across your trains to score. So we rolled four dice around instead of eight dice around, which made the goods uber
scarce,
which led to some really cutthroat game, and we had to stop four or five rounds in and call it because it just, yeah. Brian and I were way ahead, and Kathy and Larry were sliding backwards to oblivion, which was my bad. So, but I think people got a taste for the game and realizing what it really is, and it really is an interesting game to me because it's a really tight economy, it's a really cutthroat game, it's heavily reliant on planning ahead, timing, and these are things I struggle with in some really heavy games, especially the high interaction heavy games. But I still think this is a cream of the crop game. I really like this game. I like sitting down. You need some good headspace for Age of Steam. And then it just has a plethora of maps that you can play on with various rules, including the box has a solo map, a two-player map, and it has the auction of all auctions in my mind. Now, not the best auction game necessarily, but the auction is so interesting and different. I just think it brings a really neat element to the game. Comments, questions.
I definitely want to try this one again.
Yes. For better or for worse.
Yeah. Just, I feel like I learned a lesson from this last game. And I want to see if I...
There's a moral tale in every box.
From there, we went on to play an unusual deck builder that I love, you love, and I think we convinced Brian to play, and I think he liked it. And I say unusual because when I saw the box 2 years ago, I was like, that's not a game for me. And I really like it, and that's Heart of Crown. And we played completely new. Everything we played was new, Brant, I believe.
Yep.
And it was almost like a first play because every card was new, so you had to read it and kind of figure it out. But I really enjoyed that game a lot. I love the idea of it's like two games in one. You're deck building, and then at some point you stop deck building and you back a princess and then just have to get the cards out of your deck to support her to score 20 points before anyone else. And I thought it was really good. I'm not sure how others felt.
I think Heart of Crown is my favorite deck builder, so I love it. I did not do well. I lost. I tried some crazy shenanigans with all the cards in the market, and it just wasn't efficient, but it was fine because it was fun to just try it. I mean, deck builders are all about combos, and I got off some really cool combos where I was like able to, without coins, get a 4-cost card, a 6-cost card, an 8-cost card, and a 10-cost card in one turn. I was happy with that. That was such a cool turn. But yeah, I love Heart of Crown.
I do too. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, it was fine. I don't know. I don't see why I need to play it. I know you guys love it, and that's great. But
we play it to have fun.
I guess I missed that. So.
In Yorktown?
No, we had Encore, which I say Encore.
Wait, what?
But it's Encore.
Is it Encore? I don't know how to say it.
It's an Encore.
Or.
And if you say it fast, people clap. I personally, I'll let you guys explain the game, but for me, I would take that game over Basic Splendor at this point. I really enjoyed it.
I like it better than Splendor.
No, I want an engine build. Splendor's got an engine build. I like that better.
I think I like Splendor more with 4.
Kathy and I are right. You guys are wrong.
Anyway, so it has the little tokens, although they're lighter and smaller, and you pull 3 tokens a turn. You can only hold 5 tokens, and then there's the Unk tokens, which give you like an extra ability on your turn. There's a row of tiles, and instead of pulling tokens, you can spend those tokens to get a tile, and then you build a tableau in front of you. You're trying to connect. Each one is basically a color and an animal. And you're trying to connect 5 in a row of an animal or 5 in a row of a color. Once you build 4 tiles adjacent to each other, you can put 1 tile kind of centered on those. And there's also some additional tiles like that give you extra resources, straight up give you victory points, or you can draft people, which I believe are scribes, who give you an additional turn. And you run through until somebody puts 13 tiles in their tableau, finish the game, and score your points. Very light in. I totally enjoyed the game. It was very fun. It was a really cool 30-minute game with a little market and trying to read the market and what are the players going to do. And it had that really good feeling of, like, I'm watching what other people are doing, but I'm not... It's not too much to pay attention to myself and other people, and that makes the interaction so good because I can deal with all that.
You should note the rule book.
Yes. Assumes you're playing 2-player and then gives you all the added rules for 3 and 4-player, which is backwards of almost every rule book I've ever read. So I missed a rule, which was fine. I did not destroy this game. We were able to quickly amend, but I've never seen that, where it assumes you're playing 2 and then gives you additional rules for 3 and 4-player. But there you go.
And then from there we played Jump Drive. I mean The City.
Oh, right.
And that was fun.
Yeah. We really just... You need to play like 3 in a row. It's so fast, right? Like, once we knew it,
yeah,
we probably should have just shuffled
how fast that went.
And play again. It's
you
like...
You were right. The scoring was exponential.
7 minutes, 8 minutes. It's so fast.
Then we played the USS Yorktown, which...
failed so incredibly miserably.
Yeah.
But it's okay to lose a game from time to time.
Yeah. It's just... It was...
We didn't stand a chance,
we didn't
though.
It was demoralizing. Deteriorating, destructive. It was. Woo.
We accomplished
nothing.
We crashed a couple of planes.
Yeah.
We blew up a couple of planes. Some of us crashed landing.
I crashed.
I would totally play that game again. I don't know if it's a stream of bad luck with rolling ones. Once you roll, it's Yahtzee style. You can roll infinitely. When you roll ones, they're done. They're locked, and you lose fuel. If you lose your fuel, then you crash. But I would try it again. It's just, boy, if I just keep rolling ones or that whole thing is too prevalent, I would be done with the game. But I would play it 2-3 more times just to see, because it definitely has those highs and lows. Our second game had all lows. There were no highs. And I think that's where everybody was kind of commenting negatively on the game. But I would try it again. I mean, it's not long, and it's definitely exciting with the real time and the dice rolling. It adds that excitement, but not when you fail miserably at every task you try to do.
So then we went on to After Midnight. So this is technically Sunday morning now.
I never played After Midnight.
Probably a very interesting game that created some laughter for us, Moneybags. And, I mean, if we could do this now, unfortunately the audience can't see the shaking of our hands, but... how would you describe that game? Not really social deduction? I mean,
kind of
a little
bluffing.
Bit?
Social deduction.
Bluffing? Like, what would you call it?
Yeah, just mainly bluffing, right?
Bluffing.
And trying to read the table and just, you know, going through.
But
basically,
it's only so much of a bluff because you can hear the bag and see the bag and feel the weight of the bag, right?
Yeah, but you don't know. So, like, yeah, basically one person's the boss and they give money out to all these... to everyone else playing, no one knows exactly what the boss divvied up. On your turn, you have three choices. Either you can steal from any other player's bag, which is just grab their bag and take however many coins you want from that bag and put them in yours. Or you can just pass your turn and say you're not going to do anything. Or you can seal up your bag so it can't be affected at all for the rest of the round. If someone does take that action to steal someone's bag, to steal from someone's bag, then they pass it back, and then basically there's like a 5-second timer. Like if they want to call, like challenge that and see, like now it's kind of a head-to-head. Like if they challenge it, those two people just dump out their bags and see who has the most. Whoever has the
tallest,
whoever wins the challenge
gets everything.
Gets everything, and then you just go around until basically the boss has had two turns. After that's all said and done, the person with the highest stack wins. Right?
And the reason why the highest stack matters is because there is a gem in there that's probably the thickness of 5 coins.
Yep.
And is also lighter, so that's a little bit of the deception. But what I thought it was interesting, what's difficult about it, though, is, and it probably plays better with more people, with 4 people, if Brant challenged Brian and won or lost, then they have a ton of, you know, especially if it was the last round of the game, they're going to, one of those two is going to win that round because they're going to have all the coins between them because the challenge is an all or nothing situation, which I think with more people, you might get more smaller challenges that you might wind up with 2 or 3 people that have a big bag. But I thought it was cool. The components were amazing. Kathy and I were commenting on those bags, right? They were lined and everything.
Yeah, they were very high quality components. It felt like there was just something missing.
Absolutely.
With the play of the game.
Like one
it was
rule
fun,
or one...
But it felt like there needed to be something else.
Right.
I don't know what, but it needed like one more thing.
Right, we played 2 rounds and that was definitely enough.
Yeah.
To get the enjoyment out of it, like for the first, you know, just for the night, and then kind of move on to something a little bit more substantial.
And I think my highlight was when I felt you weren't shaking the bag aggressively enough for us to know what was in there. You shook it so aggressively, coins just came flying out of the bag.
I think, to me, what was missing, this isn't actually it, is that the game required us to create the fun elements, like how we're going to jokingly shake the bag, or funny things we're going to say, or meta, oh, I'm going to challenge you because you challenged me last time. Like, it required the players to do that with the game. The game didn't really set up anything that made any of the choices interesting. And so we had fun because it was late, because the coins were cool, because we could joke about the bag. And like at one point, Brian flicked a can like across the room with the bag, which was funny, but that's not like a rule in the game.
It should be.
And so, I mean, I would be...
We didn't call it bag all night, which also made it funny.
I'd be... Yeah, true. I'd be perfectly happy to just never play the game again, even though it's a fond memory of what was happened that was funny, but it just required us to create that humor that we could have just garnered by sitting around making jokes as well. Like, the game didn't really lead us to that. But the components were cool. I would argue the components were 10 times the game.
Yes.
Then we just sat around telling jokes after.
Well, Brant finally got Brian and I to play a game he's been touting for at least 3 weeks now. And
game of the
how about
decade,
Fleet
right?
The Dice game? I've been touting that for a year.
Yeah, but I introduced you to that. And honestly, looking at the box, I've been skeptical.
Yeah.
But I will say I really enjoyed it and thought it was clever and a really fun game, and that was Liftoff.
I thought you were not going to say the title.
And I'll let you describe it, but I really did enjoy it.
Liftoff is a game from Z-Man Games. I can't remember the design. I know the designer's name is Jeroen. I can't remember his last name. It's not the Jeroen from Splatter, who is an actual rocket scientist, space something, I believe in Europe. And anyway, so this game, I think it's been out for like 2 or 3 years there, and Z-Man brought it across the pond over to North America. We got a hold of a copy here. So it's like an engine build, card drafting, mission completion, I guess, resource management game. I know that's funny. Larry was listing a whole bunch of things before we were laughing, but literally this game has all those elements, and I think they just work together so well. So in a round, you're going to first draft these specialists that are going to give you a bonus, which will either be money or victory points or some increased activity for that round that you can do, as well as an opportunity to purchase things like technology or upgrade your spaceship. Once everybody does that, you'll kind of play your specialist cards, and then basically simultaneously you draft mission cards. There's four levels of missions. You draft, like, you draw three, keep one. If you get a bonus, it'll be like draw four, keep two. And you get these mission cards that'll have certain requirements, like your weight of your ship and the level of your laboratory and various other things. And you're trying to complete these by paying money to launch your rocket. You can get multiple launches, or you can complete multiple missions in one launch. You score a bunch of victory points, which are Mickey finger peace signs, Mickey the Mouse looking things. The game very much has that like 50s cartoon look, kind of the Fallout look, if you will. And and everybody completes their missions, and then you discard your specialists and you keep going. You do that for four rounds, and then things will reset and more missions will come out. You have some end game objective points. You could score a lot of objective points from, or points from objective cards, and you play four more rounds. It's pretty snappy. Like, probably straight on an hour and a half, hour and 15 for us. It said 30 minutes per player. We were right there. It's just solid. All of those mechanisms just work really well together. You have a little bit of an engine build. The drafting is not really interesting, but it's not trying to be overly interesting. It's just, instead of getting drawn, dealt three cards, you get to look at six. it just keeps everything really tight, really interesting. Lots of like great abilities. There's not really any punishment. It's just, ooh, I can upgrade that. Ooh, I can upgrade that. Ooh, I get more money, which is always really nice when a game just kind of hands you resources and says, now see what you can do with this. Now see what you can do with this.
I like the idea too, Brand, on the draft, that if you had a card that you didn't have the resources to do the bottom action, or you didn't want the bottom action, you could just opt, you get the top bonus and then just get two money. Yeah. And that, I did that a few times where that was necessary, and I think if it didn't have that, it would be lacking something. So I think, you know, that was a good catch on their part to have that rule in there. That really added to the game for me.
Yeah, really simple mechanisms to mitigate luck. The basic draft mitigates a little luck there. That mitigates a little bit of luck. There's a lot. What was your thought on that, Brian?
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I know the expectations were kind of high coming in, just because you'd been talking about it, right?
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. It seems like it's got some different ways to approach it and just different ways to, you know, to just kind of play through. So I really had fun with it, too.
Kathy?
I didn't play it this time, but I had played it one other time, two-player with Grant. I don't like space games, but I actually do like this. They're building a spaceship, but I did like it, and I would play it again.
I would argue it's more of a space game than Underwater Cities.
Yeah.
Which,
it's not so much space, it's more the futuristic feel.
It's the futuristic
feel.
Technological.
Yeah, space is not pasted on, because the theme is there, it's just not really interesting.
It's like you're not in space yet.
Right, yeah. But anyway, it's a great game. I believe it's from this year in North America, and it's phenomenal. I think it's another hidden gem, so I definitely suggest people that like medium-weight Euros, like slightly heavy, right? Like a Rococo slightly heavy, go check it out. Liftoff from Z-Man Games.
And then we all went to bed. It was late. And in the morning, Brian and I got those two games of No Returning that we discussed, and then the final game of the con for Brian and I was Clask, which I had never played, and that was a lot of fun. I'm terrible at that game. I've never gotten beat so bad in a game two times in a row, and then bought two copies of it right afterwards.
You've never done that?
No.
Well, are you sure?
Lost two games in a row that badly and then bought the game? I don't think so. And my kids are gonna love it, but yeah, I mean, we're gonna get some copies, I think, in the store, and I think.
Yeah, I forgot how much I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Asmodee is actually going to be, you know, bringing it in late. So it had been tough for us to get. Like, I think there were some avenues that we could have brought it in, but now Asmodee is going to be making it a little more readily available. So, yeah, take a look for that at the store too. And it's a lot better price point, I think. I think it used to be a bit more. Now I think it's like closer to like $50 for the, you know, the two-player version. So, yeah, it was really good to just get that back to the table.
That was a blast. And for those of you that don't know, it's basically almost like air hockey, but with, like, you have a magnet on the bottom of the board, and you have a wall between you underneath, so you can't go to your opponent's side of the board. So underneath, you have this magnet controlling this upright, not person, but, like, abstract token that's hitting a ball back and forth trying to score into your opponent's, you know, circle. And there's three barriers in the middle, like little white cubes that are magnetized. So the different ways you lose a point or your opponent scores a point is, one, if you score into the hole, you get a point. Or if two of those obstructions get magnetized to your stick, you lose a point. Or, and this is the best one because I did it four times, if you accidentally pull your stick into your own hole in a zealous effort to defend, you lose a point. And I think I was laughing out loud for several minutes while we were playing this.
All right, we're about to go through the tunnel in Hamden, and this is where we hold our breath. So you're going to hold your breath with us. There'll be about a 7-second pause here as we all hold our breath through the tunnel. Here we go. Okay, there we go. So, Connecticut, here we are. Love that part. All right. So I think that pretty much wraps up PAX Unplugged. Things I wanted to mention were, you know, I got around to talk to a lot of publishers. It was awesome. It was a little bit like more New York Toy Fair-esque or even Dice Tower Con, where I had, like, conversations with publishers. It wasn't just business. It's still talking about the industry and whatnot, but it was kind of nice to just stop and not be trying to talk about reviews or whatever, or what we've got, what they've got, just kind of chatting. Got to do a lot of that. We did pick up several review copies here. It wasn't a ton. It wasn't Gen Con-esque, but I've got 10, 12 games. Kathy may be giving me eyes that I got more than that. I can't remember that we picked up. So we'll be getting those reviews out. It's actually funny. This was like the first con where I've had publishers being like, could you hold off and do a review in February or March? Because we're not actually going to do a lot of release or promotion with the game now that it's kind of getting published and finished post-Christmas. So that was an interesting piece. I'll have some time to play those. Can't not mention, the Reading Market, Reading Terminal Market. Did we talk about that yet?
A little bit.
Such good food. Such an awesome place.
Closes so early.
I am not a food aficionado. I don't care, but that I love that place. It's so fun to go in there and do all that. Just a great chance to talk to a lot of people and whatnot. What were your final thoughts on the con, everybody?
Yeah, I had a great time. I'm glad it worked out this year for me to get there. I know it had been a little bit more hectic, like this time of year in the past, but, you know, it was a good chance to get out and kind of take a breath, but also get some of the new stuff to the table and, you know, try some games out that will be coming to the store at some point. So just getting that information and talking to all the different the people there, it's just a great time. So I had a blast.
Yeah, I did too, and I think what makes it nice, I mean, I consider this a local con, even though, you know, traffic today made it seem less local. You know, and again, it's at the end of the season, which is kind of nice, the end of the year, because we've talked to these people 2, 3, 4 times prior at Gamma or Gen Con or Dice Tower Con. So now it's kind of the whole year build up, and hey, you know, you get to see them all before the holidays, before the year ends, and kind of recap. And again, for me, it's great that I consider it local. It's very accessible versus, you know, some people can't get out to Gen Con or Dice Tower Con or whatever. So from that perspective, it's great. I also appreciate that it's 3 days instead of 4 days, because you're definitely tired today. Like today, I commented at one point to Brian, usually we're hustle, hustle, hustle. Today we were like walking, like every step was like super slow motion. It was like the sloth in that Zootopia movie, right? When you're like, license plate, please, or they would tell the joke. Like, I felt like we were just walking so slow today. And then I picked up one of those new board game table bags to carry some of Brian's loot. And, you know, Brian was laughing because he kept walking behind me. So every time I turned to talk, I'd knock a different person over, like on either side of me, right? So, and it was all in slow motion because we were not moving very fast. So, but it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, going into this one for me, I was sick the last week, and it's just such a busy time. I was almost wondering, and then when everything happened with Seth, I was almost wondering if I should have not come, but I will say by the end of it, I'm just glad I did. I had fun. Even as an introvert, there's so many opportunities to, like, it's a con, so there's so many people and so much happening, and it's so busy and loud, but it, there are also so many other opportunities to, like, sit down and focus and have quiet, and there's, like, plenty of space for that there, which I appreciate. And even, like, the mornings where I would listen to till everybody left the Airbnb, and I was like, all right, now I'll leave my room and read a book for a few minutes, and then head over, and it turned out to be a really relaxing weekend and really fun. Got to play a lot of fun games too, and just it ended up being more relaxing than I thought it might be at the beginning of the weekend, so I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, I love that Kathy commented on that, because I think that's really important. We, you know, Brian, Larry, and I are kind of gamers, go, 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 go. We just go to bed super late after having played too many games, get up early to play, to play too many games, even in the Airbnb, just trying to cram as many as we can. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can go out to eat and then just be done with games at night. You can wake up late and not get to the con when the doors open at PAX Unplugged, and it's fine. You can still have a good time. You can stay close enough that you can hang in your Airbnb until noon and then come out and do all the things, and you'll still get plenty out of the con and plenty of things to do. So it doesn't need to be 24/7 or nothing. So I think that was really important. I really enjoyed the con. On a side note, this is the last convention for Sam Healy with the Dice Tower. He announced that he was leaving, generally on, you know, good terms. I mean, not good for him, the various things he has to do with family and whatnot. But it was cool getting to hang out with him, and I shared memories. Sam and I have memories outside of just, like, conventions or board games or whatever. So we were able to share some of those things and talking about playing music with him and that, and it was just a neat thing. And I just wanted to say my thank you to Sam and all the things he's brought to board games, Dice Tower, and even just our friendship over the years. And good luck to him in the future. I know he's going to be awesome wherever he goes, whatever he does. And it was good. I had a good final handshake and a good connection at the end, which I thought was really touching and nice. So bye, Sam Healy. You will be missed. We love you. And I think that's it for PAX Unplugged, everybody. 2019, here we go. We are almost home. We are like 30 minutes away from home, everybody. How does that sound?
Yay.
Woo-hoo. All right. So on behalf of the gang here, well, actually, no, we'll all say goodbyes. Until next time, I'm your host, The Brant.
And Kathy.
And Brian.
And Larry.
Hey, and until then, we hope you step into the portal.